cool under pressure. And always in control. He's one brother who works undercover.
Come on, baby, come on.
Oh, he's that way.
Woo! From Universal Pictures and Imagine Entertainment.
Damn, that girl gets a ring.
Comes a brother.
Oh! Oh, that ain't right.
Like no other.
Wow! I feel good.
Eddie Griffin is...
You mess with the fro, you got to go.
Undercover Brother.
Would you stop fooling around?
Welcome into another episode of the Bad Movies Worst Opinions podcast, where we believe that everybody has a favorite bad movie, and the only rule of the podcast is that we must watch a movie that's rated below a 6.0 on IMDb. So for full transparency, I was thinking about taking this week off. But my undercover brother was like, you know what? Let's do one movie. I let you pick whatever movie you wanted to. You had free reign to pick a movie. You picked Undercover Brother.
Absolutely.
This movie is rated 5.9 on IMDb. There's the plot. When the man tries to derail a black candidate's presidential campaign, an undercover brother and his fellow secret agents come to the rescue. It is funny now to watch these movies in hindsight where the idea and concept of having a black president was just such a far-fetched idea that it could be the plot of a movie. Undercover Brother, we did head of state on Election Tuesday.
Right.
This was like a thing that was really discussed in black culture.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, it was right in the lead-up to Obama, if you think about it, because Obama came around for 2008, but... yeah, the early 2000s, they was really trying to go at it with these "what happens if a president's black" movies.
So we're happy to be joined right now by my guy Joshua Nickens. This is back. This is your what, second podcast
this
that you've done?
This third. Is my third.
Yeah, you did The Grudge. What other one did you do? Be Cool. That's
Be
what
Cool.
You did.
Yep.
You did. Yeah. So this is your third podcast. We're happy to have you on today. Again, you picked Undercover Brother, a 5.9 on IMDb. You can watch this movie currently on Stars. That's where I saw it. The movie has a runtime of 86 minutes. This could quite possibly be the shortest movie that we've ever done on the podcast.
I just want to put it in the air right now that 5.9 is disrespectful.
In a good way or a bad way?
In a bad way. It's disrespectful in a bad way.
Okay, we'll get to it. The budget for this movie is $25 million. It made $41.6 million. I will say this. There are good things about this movie. There are bad things about this movie. I'm just happy that you and I got to live in an era where they were able to try this movie. This movie would not be made today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely can't make this right now.
No one would certainly go see this movie in the box office. For this movie to make $40 million in the box office, we're not counting DVD sales. We're not counting people renting this movie. Like, this movie was a success. There's no chance you could make this movie today. So I'm just happy that movies like this even existed when we were coming up.
This movie, if someone had the gall to make it right now, it's going straight to Tubi.
This is absolutely a Tubi movie. This movie came out May 31st of 2002. You and I were freshmen in high school, right? Or just about to start our freshman year of high school.
That sounds about right. Yeah,
no. So we were young when Undercover Brother came out. This was actually my first time seeing it. I feel like I've seen parts of it before, but I don't think I ever saw this movie from start to finish.
I've watched this with my mom several times.
You got like this movie on DVD.
I have it on DVD.
I know you do.
Yeah, of course I do.
You are the only person that still has an active working DVD collection. Like, you obviously have all the streaming services. You still go into crates and watch DVDs.
That's because there's movies like this where I could, on a whim, want to watch it, but no streaming service that I currently have has it, or none of them have it. And I just don't like being told what I can watch when I want to watch it. So I keep this stuff on DVD, especially movies like this, and I can go pop it in whenever I want.
You're going to make fun of me for this, but one show that I want to watch is the Soul Food television series, and it's not available on streaming anywhere.
See?
I was thinking about buying the complete series.
If you had that box set, this wouldn't be an issue.
You know what? That's what I should ask for Christmas. I should ask for the Soul Food box set. That'd be a nasty thing to put on your Amazon list. Hey, what do you want for Christmas? The complete series of Soul Food is what I want. Let me give you guys the box office for May 31st of 2002. This was kind of light now when you think about this. It's right after Memorial Day. Let's get to the box office for May 31st of 2002. Number one is The Sum of All Fears. That debuted at number one at $10 million. Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones, was second that week at $5.3 million. Spider-Man, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. I love that movie. That movie was number three that week at $3.7 million. Undercover Brother debuts at number four at $3.6 million. And Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron. That seems like an animated series. That sounds animated to me.
Oh, that's absolutely an animated movie. Yeah, one of those.
Have you seen that before?
No.
That sounds like your kind of film, bro. You got that on DVD? You can be real.
No, I am not watching. Now, I know what it is, but I'm not watching a cartoon movie about a horse in high school.
Okay. I just wanted
now,
to
what's
know.
Crazy is that Spider-Man has been here almost a month at this point, and it's number three.
Movies used to stay in the box office for a while when we was coming up. Yeah, because you remember, it was such a long wait time until DVD, so you knew you kind of had a little bit. Now, if you don't go see nothing in the first 10 days, bro, you wait another week, it's going to be on demand.
Especially if the movie's bad. Like, if it's a trash movie, it'll get us 2 weeks in the theaters. Like, you know what? Let's just go ahead and pack this in. It's on DVD by
like
the end
Red
of the
One,
month.
Basically Red One.
Absolutely.
100%.
Yeah.
Have you seen Red One yet?
No, I can't do it.
You love The Rock, though.
I do, and I like Chris Evans. I like Lucy Liu. I like The Rock. I can't do it.
And you love the bad Rock movies. You like Snitch.
I'm more of a Rundown kind of person, though.
You got Snitch on DVD.
No, I don't. I have The Rundown. I have Doom. I have Gridiron Gang. I got movies like that.
That's what I'm saying, because you love The Rock.
Walk It Tall.
Look at that. You got the whole Rock's DVD collection. You went to Walmart. You got the five-piece set. You love The Rock.
Stop it.
Let me give you the cast for Undercover Brother. Eddie Griffin is Undercover Brother. He is also Anton Jackson. Chris Kattan is Mr. Feather. He put on an acting performance in this movie. He was great.
Yes. I don't think anybody else could have played Mr. Feather other than Chris Kattan. Like, I don't think anybody else could have. It was so funny.
We have Anjanae Ellis. She is Sister Girl. Denise Richards is the White She-Devil. Anjanae Ellis, she is actually from King Richard. That's how I remember her. Denise Richards, just elite milk. Let's just go ahead and let's give it up right now. Elite milk. Denise Richards. We had Dave Chappelle. He was Conspiracy Brother Jones. Chi McBride is the Chief. Neil Patrick Harris is Lance the Intern. He was very, very funny in this movie.
Another clutch supporting actor.
Yeah, very, very good supporting actor. We also had Gary Anthony Williams. He was Smart Brother. Billy D. Williams. He was General Warren Boutwell. He was, this was basically like an episode of the Boondocks. That's basically what this is.
That's the comparison I wanted to make. I feel like this was a full-length motion picture of the Boondocks that just, the satire just wasn't as intelligent.
What was your favorite, I guess, brotherhood member? Who was your? Because all of them, Sister Girl, Smart Brother, and Conscious Brother, they were all very good in their own independent way.
You know, I love Dave Chappelle, so Conspiracy Brother is probably my favorite character. But I also got to give the nod to Smart Brother just for the simple fact that he's played by Uncle Ruckus.
Oh, that's Uncle Ruckus.
That's fast Uncle Ruckus playing Smart Brother.
This really is the Boondocks. Now I've learned this is the Boondocks. This is one of those movies that you had to see it when it came out. If you were watching this movie for the first time like I was in 2024, it don't work. It don't work. Now, I get it. If you saw this movie back in 02 or maybe, you know, you saw it in 04 when it was on DVD, maybe this movie would work. I did not hate Undercover Brother. I also honestly was waiting for the movie to be over.
I love this movie from start to finish.
When I was about 40 minutes, I started checking. I'm like, bro, I'd rather be on TikTok right now. I was really struggling to get through.
Dude, I'm sitting there cracking up. You're tripping.
No, it was funny. I ain't gonna lie to you. At the end of this movie, I was like, bro, I'm ready to move on with my day. I'm ready to move on with my life. So our movie begins with a groovy trip down memory lane through some of the culturally relevant events that make up Black culture. Things have changed since the 70s, and there's only one man that can get them back on track. It's our friend, the Undercover Brother. There's also a secret society called the Brotherhood, created for the purpose of stopping the man. But their plan is no match for the Undercover Brother. We meet Mr. Feather, who is working hand-in-hand with the man. We also meet Warren Boutwell, a decorated war hero who has a legitimate chance at being the president. Well, of course the man can't have this, and he has to bring Boutwell down. But the Brotherhood wants to recruit our guy, Undercover Brother, to the team. I do think the highlight of this movie to me, and we can even skip a little bit, and this is going to be what I think the movie gets right. I think almost every character that is supposed to be funny is funny.
Yes.
I think Denise Richards is funny. I think Undercover Brother is funny. I think the Brotherhood characters, I think the man and his kind of like this Charlie's Angels, Inspector Gadget, shadowy figure, I think he's good. Everybody that's supposed to bring the laughs to the movie, I think, does their part to carry their weight.
And I think anybody that needs is supposed to be playing it straight even gets some good comedic shots in every now and then, too. Because Sister Girl, of course, is supposed to be playing it straight. But even she gets in a couple throughout the movie. I think it's comedic-wise, it's written very well, and everybody knew how to do what they were supposed to do. Gerald Batwell's got to be a shot at Colin Powell, right?
100%.
Absolutely. It has to be.
I was really happy to see, I understand Billy Dee Williams is like in the movie, but he feels like a cameo because he's like not really in the movie. And then where there's like the big cameo later in the movie, like, oh, okay, that's cool. Like they really leaned into the 70s and I thought they executed it.
What cracks me up is the fact that they photoshopped him in with Bush in that one picture. For whatever reason, that made me laugh. Like maybe it might have been a picture where Bush was actually in there with Colin Powell, but they photoshopped Billy Dee Williams over it, and it cracked me up because you could tell was shopped, but then since it's Billy Dee Williams, it seemed kind of believable too. It's kind of weird.
It is really hard, I think, in a movie like this where the white people are clearly the bad guys, mm-hmm. to then have the white people be some of their favorite characters in there as well. Like we mentioned Neil Patrick Harris, like he's supposed to be the like weird out of place white dude. He ended up having a place. When they bring in Denise Richards, she's supposed to be like the black man's kryptonite. She ends up being a very redeemable character in the end. You're supposed to hate Mr. Feather, but there's something really likable about Mr. Feather's character.
What? And that's intentional. It's like, yeah, you want to take down the power structure, but at the same time, there are some people that you got the people who are allies the whole time. You got people that turn into allies, and then you got somebody who is clearly having an identity crisis because he wants to, you know, stick with the man, but he can't help but that culture take them over every now and then.
I do have to ask you this question. Do you think Eddie Griffin is a good lead for this movie? Like now, if you could like go back and you could recast this movie, are you recasting Eddie Griffin as the lead of this movie?
I can't think of anybody else that I could get that would have the comedic timing to play Undercover Brother, though. Just off the top of my head at that point in time. I mean, I don't know. If you wanted somebody that maybe might have fit the athleticism a little bit better, what, Michael Jai White maybe? But comedic-wise, I can't think of anybody else other than Eddie Griffin. And it's weird seeing him as he is now and thinking he did this role. But at the same time, he does silly movies all the time. I mean, Master P let him make a whole movie that was off the wall.
A movie you definitely have on DVD.
I do not have that movie.
You definitely have I Got the Hookup on DVD.
I do not.
So I don't know why you got to lie here on this podcast.
I don't, but funny story is my uncle had it, but it was the bootleg, and whoever wrote it on there spelled it wrong. They was like, H-O-U-K, I Got the Hookup. It's silly, but I laugh at
having
that every time
bootleg,
I think of
I Got the Hookup is crazy behavior. You hate black people. That's clearly what we learned here on the podcast.
What?
So a press conference is called, and everybody expects General Batwell to announce his presidency, but that's not what happens. He is planning on opening up a chain of fried chicken restaurants. The Brotherhood has to find out what's going wrong, and there's only one man for the job, Undercover Brother. Sister Girl pulls up on Undercover Brother and takes him to their hideout / headquarters, which is located inside a barbershop. This is one of the critiques I would have for this movie, and maybe I'm looking at this through a present-day lens. I do feel like this movie just attacks every stereotype that we have about black people and every stereotype that we have about white people, and that's basically the joke for 90 minutes. That I know at that time would have been really, really funny. Again, just seeing it for the first time in present day, it's just like, I don't know, it just didn't, I can't explain it.
But it's the same thing the Boondocks did. Not only is it a full-length Boondocks movie, basically, and like I said, it's just the jokes aren't necessarily as intelligent as Aaron MacGruber would have wrote them, but it's also a play on blaxploitation movies, too. So if you put those two things together, yeah, you're going to have all those black and white stereotypes throughout the whole movie. It's kind of the point.
What do you think it is about black people that just love karate movies? That's just like a theme. I don't know what it is. Like you think of like Wu-Tang and their fascination with Japanese culture.
Right.
You think about the Boondocks. It's like clearly anime influenced and all of that. this movie. There's like a Bruce Lee reference in this movie. There's something about black people, man. They just love martial arts.
This is just a theory, but I think us liking karate movies at that time was kind of our way to justify liking anime without getting made fun of. Because, I mean, when we were in high school, I couldn't say out loud that I liked Dragon Ball, not to everybody. Because, I mean, you was getting cooked for it. But, you know, if you say, oh, man, I like Crouch Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
It was really good.
Yeah, or I like Iron Monkey, or I like Bruce Leroy, or, you know, any of that stuff, that's cool. But, you know, secretly you still like the anime mostly, but, you know, you could say this stuff out loud at the time.
What do you think was sort of that breakthrough moment? Because I would say anime has gone mainstream in a lot of ways. One Piece, Attack of the Titans, Dragon Ball Z.
I don't want to credit them 100% because it could be some other factors, but I think a huge part of it would be maybe RDC World.
Oh.
Because I feel like their sketches kind of made it cool for black people, you know, young adults, teenagers, to really like anime and just live in that. Because, I mean, they wore it on their chest and did the skits every episode. And it's like, oh, well, you know, maybe it is cool to go ahead and like this. They like it. And they're making money off of liking it right now.
I also think, too, on like a big like corporation, I think Netflix made an investment pretty early on in anime and like really pumped a lot of money into it.
Right.
And when you got a machine like that, and I mean, we all know like the homepage for Netflix is just such a, you just don't know what's going on there. Then you go on, it's like, oh, what's this? And the algorithm is just so tailored to what you like. I think it just opened up for people to give things a try.
And I think Hulu played a part in it, too, because personally, Hulu was where I got to watch One Punch Man. I got to watch that there. I could rewatch Dragon Ball Z, GT. I could watch Super on there right now. Between that and Hulu, I can explore other stuff. Tubi gave me the chance to watch all the different Power Rangers series in Japanese, like the Zoo Ranger and Kaku Ranger and all that stuff. So, yeah, the streaming services and them actually bringing that content over in its original run, or, you know, how it was original format, I think that played a part, too.
So we learn about the man who is controlling the general, which explains why he's not running for the White House. The Brotherhood knows that there is a conspiracy going on regarding the man, and they're going to have to figure it out themselves. Our next stop is to the golf course, where we spot the general playing golf and handing out chicken to the white folks. Undercover Brother breaks into Mr. Feather's office for a quick bout, but he needs some help from Sister Girl and some fancy shoes to get out of trouble. The Brotherhood is starting to figure out that something is going on with the general, and they have a plan in infiltrating Multinational Incorporated to save him. But before this happens, Undercover Brother has to go through some training. Their usual training methods are proven to be a little bit too difficult, so they bring in the big guns category on this podcast called the Rewatchables with Bill Simmons, and they call it the Dion Waiters Awards. Like, you're not on the screen for very long, but when you're on screen, you're gonna get a lot of buckets in a short period of time.
Okay.
That's Neil Patrick Harris in this. He wasn't on the screen a lot. He maybe has 4 or 5 scenes, but I'm telling you,
he was cooking every time he was on there.
Every time he's on the screen, he hit a three, he get a steal, he got a dunk on the other end, an assist.
I mean,
Neil Patrick Harris was so good.
By the end of the movie, he's shooting from half court.
100% confident, too. He was out here Steph Curry. He was doing the shimmy and everything. I really liked you. He might have been one of my favorite characters in the movie.
And this is completely random, but it's not lost on me that Billy Dee Williams, he's selling, General Boutwell is selling the meals, the chicken meals, and it comes with the malt liquor, which, you know, is not only a drink attributed to black folk as a stereotype, but then Billy Dee Williams' real life was like the face of Colt 45 malt liquor for a while.
Have you ever had a Colt 45 before?
No, I have not.
We should have got one for this podcast. We should have definitely went down there to Wild Woody's, and we should have got us a Colt 45.
No,
bro.
Thanks. I remember just when my grandma would take us to, like, you know, her brother's house and stuff, and they would be drinking. They got Red Dog. They got Colt 45. That stuff stank, bro.
You get your little Mad Dog 2020.
I can't do it. Mad Dog, Red Dog, Colt 45, that stuff stank. Beer, no thank you.
So Undercover Brother goes in undercover in Multinational Incorporated as Anton Jackson, a tobacco rep, and he gets the information on the general that he needs, but he's spotted. And Mr. Feather is going to bring in Black Man's Kryptonite, who was played by Denise Richards. Our new couple is at the bar doing karaoke to some very unseasoned tunes. She's really putting a full-on blitz on our brother, and our dog is slipping. He was lost in the sauce. There was a couple of women that you could have got to play Denise Richards' character. They made a great choice. You could have got Carmen Electra to play this character. You could have got Tiffany Amber Thiessen. There was some elite baddies during that time. This was a good piece. You got to think she was in Wild Things. So you're like, all right, you know, she was a baddie.
You could tell Anton was gone by the time they were doing karaoke, because once he got to swinging his arms and stuff, the seasoning was gone.
The seasoning, all the flavor was gone.
The strength of the Black Panther was stripped away.
100%. So our man, the General, speaking of falling into the sauce, the General is falling into it. So is our brother, undercover brother. He is some sort of mixture of like Carlton and Urkel. It was like a weird mix of what he was trying to do there. The man's plan is finally uncovered. The poison is in the chicken. Anton Jackson is at the white girl's house, and they're listening to Thong Song, the Michael Bolton version, and eating more mayonnaise.
No, she said she wanted the Michael Bolton version. I'm not sure who that was singing it.
It wasn't Cisco.
No, it definitely was not Cisco. It wasn't anybody with any melanin singing that song. I don't know who it was, but she was like, I want the Michael Bolton version.
This
he's like, I'm not used to anything this heavy.
This is one of the complaints that I have about the way white people listen to music. I don't have many. Listen to music how you want to listen to them. The version of the song that we originally were given is fine. Why do you got to put your own twist to the song? I don't want to hear your house version or your techno EDM version to hide in here. Just play it the way that Pharrell and the Neptunes made it.
I'm pretty sure there are some white people in a room having the same conversation about how some black artists have done, you know, their songs. I mean, think about Dolly Parton and then how Whitney pretty much bullied her out of I Will Always Love
That's
You.
That's a good point. Sometimes they don't even know. Like one time I was with this young lady and she was listening to Ready for the World.
Mm-hmm.
Let Me Love You Down, but it was like this weird white person version. I was like, yo, what are you listening to? Like, oh, I love this song. I was like, have you ever heard the original? I was like, oh, I thought this was the original.
No,
sometimes they don't even know, brother.
They don't even know. No. And I think my biggest pet peeve version of this might be Alien Ant Farm Smooth Criminal.
I remember that. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, when I heard
the video was crazy,
though. The video is very entertaining. But if you sit and actually listen to the song, dog, I get progressively angry as the song continues.
That's all. You know what? I'm going to defend Alien Ant Farm. I don't know what y'all doing right now.
No.
But I'm going to defend y'all. I'm going to defend y'all version. So before Anton takes another bite of this mayonnaise sandwich, there wasn't even no meat on the sandwich.
Right, it was just all mayo.
I don't think they like mayonnaise that much.
She was serving a Will Levis sandwich, bro.
Yeah, I don't think they like mayonnaise that much. So before Anton takes another bite, Sister Girl steps in and a choice has to be made. The undercover brother is back and he is finally aware of the white man's trap. He now meets White She-Devil. Denise Richards, she just rips off her costume. She's done playing around. She's a white She-Devil now. After a fight and a splash break, clearly the highlight of this movie. I mean, I know you're going to come in here with some, you like another part. This is the highlight of the movie. The little 30 seconds of them going back and forth with the water is the highlight of this film.
I'm not touching that. What I will say, though, is the costume switches on a dime are hilarious in this movie. Like you said, Denise Richards just rips her outfit off and she's got her leather underneath. Anton Jackson jumps through the window. He's back in his platform shoes and bell bottoms and everything. And then we Sister Girl, she changed outfits more than Janet Jackson in concert throughout the movie with the matching weaves.
I'm gonna tell you, I don't know what it was about this time. We were just really fascinated with the idea that girls could just like other girls. Like, this is a big part in American Pie 2 where they're in the house and they're kissing on each other, right, and stuff. Like, obviously, this is the PG-13 version of it, but just the idea of them splashing around in the water. If you were a 13, 14-year-old boy, you was going crazy when this scene came on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was kind of that time where, yeah, we hadn't quite got where we are now, but it wasn't like it was where it's like people would burn the movie theater down if they saw it. So, yeah, I mean, you could kind of get away with it. People still kind of gasp at it probably. But, yeah, it's right in that middle time before we got to how we are currently.
Did you like the car chase scene? Which I would not call a high-speed chase. It was just a chase.
The golf cart?
It was just a chase. No, not that part where he's in that car and she's like, go faster. And he's like, this ain't a Ferrari. This car was made in the 70s.
Yeah, that's funny.
And then he drops like Afro Sheen and some other stuff.
The 8-track through the helmet. Yeah, that's funny. I thought you were referring to the golf cart chase because that was pretty funny, too.
That was a big explosion. Half of the budget for these movies just go for paying for all these explosions. It don't be making no sense.
They brought Michael Bay in.
So when the She-Devil finally has our two cornered undercover brother and sister girl, she shoots the henchman. She tells undercover brother that she has fallen in love. The white She-Devil is now playing for the home team, baby. She playing for the Brotherhood. Back in his lair, the man wants to expand his plan, now nationwide, Operation Whitewash with the chicken. He wants to spread it across the country. All of the white people are coming around. Even Lance the intern is starting to come around. The team is now complete. The Brotherhood learns that the man's plan is to go after successful black figures, and first up is James Brown, the godfather of soul. They kidnap him, but wait, it's a trick. James Brown is actually undercover brother. There's a lot of trickery going on. There's a lot of dancing going on. People are pressing buttons. They're fighting each other. It's a lot of yelling going on. This is a very chaotic scene before we get to the conclusion of the movie.
Absolute chaos throughout this whole entire part of the movie. My favorite part, of course, is Dave Chappelle pushing that so-called button to pretty much blow the island up. That and, of course, our man coming off the bench to clear out the three guys after he was called a sissy.
He was very angry by that. He got triggered. Everybody got that word that triggers you.
He was getting flamed throughout the entire time at the Brotherhood, but the moment somebody that looked like him called him a sissy, he packed all three of them up.
He did three Mortal Kombat fatalities. He did the Kano.
He did the Sub-Zero head rip. He did the Kano heart rip, and then... the last one is actually a Jax fatality.
Ooh, look at that. Look at you. I know you got Mortal Kombat on DVD. We ain't got to argue that one. I know you got that on DVD. I actually think this was the funniest. I think Chappelle had two funny lines in this movie like that really stand out to me. Whenever the group finds out that he had sex with the white girl, he's like, "Is that everything I dreamed?" That line is hilarious. And then the whole scene where the chief of the Brotherhood just lets the white people join, and he's just going on this whole thing. Oh, my goodness.
I sleep on a pissy mattress.
Yeah, they really let Chappelle go there. And that was this is a 5 or 8 minute stretch of Chappelle where he's hilarious.
Here's an honorable mention that I feel like kind of gets slept on is the scene where, of course, Eddie Griffin's like, "Can I just get a list of words that trigger these fits? And then he goes on the whole thing about Forrest Gump, and then the gun goes on. I'm like, "I'm hit." And he's like, and you can hear him just ranting on the floor. "I'm going to need a sponge bath. I pooped myself."
His ability to, like, just change his voice in that way has just always been very, very funny to me. So the man wants the general to kill undercover brother, but sister girl just constantly steps in this movie to save the day. She gives the general the antidote. It looked like a Viagra pill. She just like, "Here, take this." He don't know what it is. He just takes the pill. So Dave Chappelle, conspiracy theory brother, he presses the red button and an alarm is set. I don't really know what the button was. It just blew everything up.
Atomic chloride.
Which I don't know how he couldn't pronounce that word, but you know what? I'm going to let that rock, Dave.
I'm trying to figure out why you have an atomic core button.
Just
out in the open now. Most villains in other movies, reasonable movies, have a voice-controlled self-destruct in case you need to blow the fortress up. Yeah. They just have a red button just sitting there. Like, anybody could lift a thing and hit that button, and your whole setup is gone.
So we have a little time for some Mortal Kombat fatalities. You alluded to that. We also have time for a quick little Beat It dance. Is it crazy to think? I'm going to ask you this because I know you love Michael Jackson.
All right.
My favorite Michael Jackson videos are Beat It, Smooth Criminal, and I got Thriller third. I understand the importance of Thriller. It's just too long. I'd much rather watch Beat It or Smooth Criminal if I'm going to watch a Michael Jackson video.
Thriller is not my number one either. I like the Remember the Time video because I thought that was pretty fun.
On the couch, he was really going back. Mike was having the memories when he wore that thing out. On the phone, you and me. He was going crazy. What about?
I always think about this. This I don't know if it was a tweet, a Facebook post, or whatever. But this guy was like, "Ain't nobody going murder dot in my house."
Mike, I'm telling you, man. Shut up. R.I.P. Mike, man. We miss you. So in the midst of all of this fighting between undercover brother and Mr. Feather, some of his trademark afro gets cut off. And if you mess with the fro, then you gots to go. Undercover brother parachutes out in the nick of times using his bell bottoms. Mr. Feather is then eaten by a shark. The Brotherhood wins. The man is defeated. That concludes Undercover Brother.
And the culture was starting to get to the man at the end, too.
Yeah. No, it was. It was. Mr. Feather, I don't even know why Mr. Feather was even working for the man. Mr. Feather wanted to be on the good guy's side. He really wanted to be, because anytime he had a chance to let it out, he let it out.
Anytime he was alone, he was putting on some R&B. And I'm trying to figure out how many takes it took for them to do that dance scene without Billy Dee Williams breaking while he's just standing there. Because I would have cracked up watching him just whatever that was during the Mary J. Blige song.
Do you like that song? That's one of my songs that I'd be perfectly fine if I never heard again. I didn't like Family Affair when it came out. I don't like it now. I just think it's the Dr. Dre beat. Like, the beat's catchy, but God, that song is annoying to me.
I don't hate it when it comes on and I didn't put it on, but I'm not going to go out of my way to listen to it. I mean, I have a whole lot of her albums in my collection, but that's not a song I'm just going to go and, you know, just listen to randomly.
There's a certain, like, group of songs, like me and my friends call it the Westport playlist or the Power and Light mix. Like, once they start playing them rap songs in rotation, your song's cooked, bro. Like, I don't need to hear California Love no more. I don't want to hear Pony no more.
Pony's dead. They done killed Pony?
Poison, California Love. You know the songs.
You know they beat the doors off of Poison.
Yeah, I'm telling you, once your rap song goes on, now I like rap music, bro, I'm over it. And that Family Affair is one of them songs that just, oh my goodness, they play all the time.
What about This Is How We Do It? Because you know that probably
fits. I do like that song.
Okay, that's what I thought. I do like
This Is How We Do It. I can't lie to you. Did you know that this movie actually has a positive rating on Rotten Tomatoes? This is the first movie we have ever done that Rotten Tomatoes actually likes this movie. It has an approval rating of 77% on Rotten Tomatoes. The site's critical consensus reads, fast-paced and filled with racial gags, Undercover Brother serves up plenty of laughs and sharp satire. I don't know if I would call the satire sharp, but it definitely does all the other stuff in the sentence.
It does. I'm actually surprised to see that it's such a positive rating on Rotten Tomatoes, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I can't believe it. I'm saying we've done almost 60 movies. We've never had Rotten Tomatoes like a movie.
Usually, if IMDb's crushing it, Rotten Tomatoes is right on board. You know, give or take, if you're looking at the audience score or the actual critic ratings. Because the audience score could still be higher, but, you know, they're not going to put that in the Wikipedia.
All right. You love this movie, so I'll let you go first. Okay. What do you think Undercover Brother gets right?
I think the jokes are right, especially for the time period. And I mean, like I say, I feel like it's a not as intelligent Boondocks episode. You know, they're lampooning the things that's going on at the time. You know, race relations in some form or fashion always has, you know, some you can lean on as far as jokes are concerned. I think the casting's great. I think this movie does a lot right.
I agree with you on the casting. It's funny, and we mentioned it earlier. The three main white characters, I think, are just all really funny. I think Denise Richards' character is done really, really well. I like Lance the intern, Neil Patrick Harris's character, and Mr. Feather. Mr. Feather was my favorite part of the movie. If I had to say, like, my two favorite parts of the movie, I like Sister Girl's character a lot. I liked Mr. Feather, and just, you and I love Chappelle so much that just seeing Dave Chappelle in these kind of movies is just always kind of fun. I imagine Half-Baked is that way for a lot of people.
Right.
Those were three
Nutty
things.
Professor.
Yeah, those are three things that I really enjoyed.
Blue Streak.
Yeah. Oh, you know we love Blue Streak. What do you think this movie got wrong?
I'm trying to think because I want to
see. I think it's too cheesy.
I was going to say, yeah, it's cheesy, but I think that's where the blaxploitation part comes in. So, I mean, yeah, I think it is. The cheese is a little bit over the top, but I can almost excuse it just for the simple fact that they're doing the whole blaxploitation thing.
Yeah, I think we view this movie differently. It's just like I'm not under the anesthesia of nostalgia. Like, nostalgia and how you remember a movie kind of freezes it in time. Like, there are some movies that you and I love that if somebody now watched for the first time, they'd be like, man, that movie's stupid. Well, you didn't see it when it came out.
You had to be there.
Yeah, you had to be there. I wasn't there for Undercover Brother, so I think in that way, some of it's kind of lost on me. It's too over the top, and it's too cheesy for my taste. Like, this is not a movie that I would go back and watch, and I wouldn't consider this movie to be really rewatchable for me. I don't really have any other interest in watching Undercover Brother. I wouldn't stop and watch this movie if I was flipping through YouTube TV like, oh, Undercover Brother is on. I don't think I would watch a whole lot of this movie. It just didn't do that for me.
Well, you know, and I think this will probably give you some background, too, because even on the whole, I was there watching it from the jump. So, you know, I've got that nostalgia piece, too. I kind of have a higher cheese tolerance anyway, because I love the old 60s and 70s Adam West Batman, too, which is elite levels of camp. So, you know, this is right up my alley as far as, you know, cheesy and campiness and all the other stuff. So, yeah, of course, it could be a bit much sometimes, but it's still enjoyable to me.
All right, this movie is rated a 5.9 on IMDb. Is that too much, too little, or just right? Something tells me we are going in opposite directions.
It is way too little.
What are you going to give this movie?
I would give this movie a 7.3.
You're my dog, and you know that. You're never coming on this podcast again.
What?
You're done in this town. You're done in 7.3?
Okay, maybe 7.3 is a bit much. I want to at least give this a 6.9. Is a 6.9 fair?
Okay.
In all fairness.
Yeah, you and I are very opposite directions.
I know, you're probably going down to like a 5.2 or something.
You know me too well. I was giving this movie a 5.3.
I figured. I knew it.
This movie a 5.3. This movie is not bad. This movie is just not for me. Those are two completely different things. I certainly get how this movie could be funny. I get right. How the jokes could land. And I laughed at times. I don't make it seem like I hate watching. I didn't. It got to the point about the hour. I knew what was going to happen. I understood what was going to happen. I was ready for the movie to end. I felt like I had seen another Cover Brother. Anytime I'm at that point where I'm just like, bro, when is movie going to be over?
You're done.
I know it's time for me. I'm giving this movie somewhere between a 5.2 and 5.4. I can't go much higher than that on Undercover Brother. I can't do it. I want to go. I can't do it. I wish I could for you.
This movie was too funky for you.
It was 100%. I'm obviously a jive turkey. That's what I've learned in this movie. We appreciate you guys listening to the podcast in 2024. Thank you so much, man. We're on to bigger and better things in 2025. I am excited. Our first movie of next year. We have been saving this for a special occasion. Rocky V is our first podcast of the new year.
How you doing, Rocky V?
Rocky V, Tommy Gunn. Oh, my goodness, I can't wait. I might watch it twice before we end up recording the podcast.
We all know how much you love Rocky.
Rocky's my favorite series.
I know.
I can't wait.
I know it is. I know you're here for all the Rocky movies.
That's why we've been saving it for this podcast. That's my guy, Joshua Nickens, man, joining us on the show, man. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks for having me one more time. You know we got to...
Oh, we're doing Drumline in 2025.
Okay.
We're 100% doing Drumline and Perfect Score.
Perfect Score and Drumline.
Those are two movies that we're doing in 2025. Hey, I appreciate you guys. Happy New Year. We'll catch you on the other side. It's the Bad Movies, Worst Opinions podcast.